Walmart indicator.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. We talk about a lot of economic indicators here on Marketplace. GDP, durable goods, housing starts, beige books. It can be a little confusing, but here's an economic indicator we can all understand. Walmart. It's the world's biggest retailer, and it's become a bellwether for consumer spending. This morning, some bad news from Bentonville. Walmart posted solid third quarter earnings, but said same store sales were down and said they'd be down again next quarter. U.S. markets were up yesterday, but they're expected to dip when they open later this morning. London's FTSE is up about a tenth of a percent. Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index dropped a percent. And the dollar hit a 15-month low yesterday. And today, a group of Asian Pacific finance ministers is calling for the U.S. to do more to increase the value of the dollar. They're worried a weak greenback could hurt the global economy. Among other things, it makes foreign goods more expensive for us, and U.S. consumers fuel about a fifth of the global economy. As the dollar has dropped, the price of gold has been at record highs, $1,115 per ounce this morning. And now supplies are running low. Ambrose Evans-Pritchard is the international business editor at the Daily Telegraph in London. Ambrose, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Why do people like to buy up gold when the value of the dollar goes down?
Well, it's almost become, the funds do it, it's almost become a reflex. But I think something deep has been going on here for some time, which is the dollar system has basically dominated the global economy since the Second World War. And that there is this feeling out there, you know, that we're in a kind of transition phase. America's, you know, lost its grip over the global monetary system, but nobody else has really stepped in to replace it. And so gold is the obvious kind of fallback option. And, it's quite understandable.
So is there anything else that's been driving up the price of gold?
The other thing that people overlook is that the supply of gold from mines has just been falling and falling and falling. So effectively, we have peak gold. They can't find new sources of ore, despite huge efforts and money being poured into exploration.
It's interesting because I think we're so used to thinking in terms of currency that it's kind of almost a strange thing for us to think about, that there is actually a limited supply of gold. When you buy gold, you actually buy physical gold.
Well, that's right. I mean, the central banks of Europe and other parts of the world, they've been selling it, preferring instead to buy U.S. treasuries and things like that. But that's rather proved to be a rather bad bargain, actually, for these governments. The thing is now is that the emerging economies, China, India, are buying gold. So the whole sort of dynamics of the market has changed.
What do you expect to see happen with gold as the supply declines and the demand increases?
Well, immediately, I mean, I think it's dependent on the dollar. I mean, if the dollar, you know, stabilizes and begins to recover, gold could sort of cool off a bit. But it may be that they can't find new sources of ore around the world. And if countries like China are accumulating massive reserves, are putting more and more of this into gold, I would say the price would, over time, just have to keep on going up. So we may see a step change to a sort of a much higher sort of permanent level.
Ambrose Evans-Pritchard is the international business editor at the Daily Telegraph. Ambrose, thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Constant Contact, dedicated to helping small businesses and nonprofits build strong customer relationships with email marketing and online surveys. ConstantContact.com. And by CSX, working to reduce traffic and pollution while moving 750,000 tons of freight daily. CSX, how tomorrow moves.
Today, the Food and Drug Administration will consider online advertising guidelines for drug companies. They spend about $11 billion on ads every year, and those ads are more important now that a lot of the more expensive drugs have gone off of patent. Today, Novartis launches an ad campaign for a new version of its heartburn drug Prevacid, and it's all about the heartstrings, as Joel Rose reports.
Novartis is betting $200 million it can make heartburn sufferers feel warm and fuzzy about Prevacid.
That's when I'd had it with frequent heartburn. That's when I got Prevacid 24-hour. And husband number two.
The ad campaign comes just as Prevacid goes on sale over the counter for the first time and at a higher price than most of its competitors. Novartis is hoping to make up in the mass market what it may lose in the prescription drug market as generic competitors move in. David Grandy is a health policy researcher at the University of Pennsylvania.
They probably are banking on the fact that they're going to be able to make that emotional appeal and make that connection to consumers and generate a level of business that they wouldn't be able to generate on the prescription market.
That's because insurance companies often push consumers to cheaper generics. When it comes to the over-the-counter market, consumers make their own decisions. I'm Joel Rose for Marketplace.
The Glass-Steagall Act was passed in the 30s to stop retail banks from doing investment banking and vice versa. It was repealed 10 years ago today, and now there's a push to bring it back, as Elisa Roth reports.
Before Glass-Steagall, banking was a free-for-all. Jeff Madrix is a senior fellow at the New School, and he says there was all kinds of funny business.
Banks would lend money to the companies and then sell shares to the public or tout the shares to the public. They would have all kinds of investment vehicles that were suspect.
The Glass-Steagall Act stopped that, but by 1999, there were so many loopholes, the law really didn't do much anymore. Edward Kane is a finance professor at Boston College, and he says the law was like the old walls you see around European cities.
We admire them and look at them as a relic of an age when there was simpler munitions and simpler ordnance.
He says there's no point in trying to reinstate the law because companies would just find a way around it again. But Madrick doesn't agree.
There are quite a few ways to break the industry up that I think could be very constructive and eliminate the likelihood of these crises again.
Like bringing back basic retail banking and forcing investment banks to have more capital reserves. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Attention, Timothy Geithner. If you really want the dollar to be worth more, try putting a little art into it. An Andy Warhol silk screen of 200 $1 bills just sold at auction for $43.5 million, which, you know, buys a lot of furs. In Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, and this is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.